Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Karnatz.
And I'm Kyle Callums.
The KUAF Summer Jazz Series welcomes the jazz fusion group, the Yellow Jackets, Saturday, June 21st at the Eureka Springs Auditorium. As part of the 16th annual series, the Grammy Award-winning Yellow Jackets will perform their high-energy mix of jazz, funk, and blues. The Summer Jazz Series is presented by the Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society. Tickets available online at the AUD, that's theaud.org.
Ahead on this edition of Weekend Ozarks, we learned the trick of the trade in a conversation with a monster truck driver. Plus, if you had a magazine, how would you choose its name? Would it be literal, a hint as to what's inside, or something completely off topic?
But first, more than 1.1 million people in the United States are living with HIV, the virus that leads to AIDS. Almost a quarter of those are unaware of their infection. The Southeast region of the United States accounts for 40% of those affected. Arkansas receiving the least amount of federal HIV and AIDS funding of any southern state. The AIDS epidemic officially began in 1981, and much has changed in support and treatment in the 33 years since. The 2013 film Dallas Buyers Club was a reminder of what little was known about HIV and AIDS in the 1980s. At the time, there was little support for researching and finding treatment, leaving many of those affected to die. Though a cure has yet to be discovered or developed, treatments have advanced to a point where those affected can live mostly normal lives, their affliction unknown to the rest of the community. In 1991, Washington County had the highest case rate of HIV in the state of Arkansas. That's according to a nurse at the Washington County HIV Clinic. Renee Gaston was there when the clinic opened in 1992 and continues to work there today.
Used to, the patients were very sick. Mm-hmm. It was horrible. But now they have a chance. If they will take their medicine and do what the doctor says, they have a long life expectancy.
In 1995, a new class of medications was introduced called protease inhibitors. The disease then becoming treatable and manageable. The staff of just three at the county clinic, plus a doctor, ensures that over 600 patients receive and are taking these medications today. Dr. Linda McGee is the founding doctor at the clinic and has long been one of the only HIV doctors in the area and the state. And though the county clinic might be intended for those with lower incomes, many with private insurance receive care just to see Dr. McGee. She was unavailable for comment, but sees patients two afternoons a week, Mondays and Wednesdays. The clinic remaining open and busy all five working days. Debbie Zimmerman is the clinic's nurse and often acts as a social worker as well, as funding does not allow one on staff. She says about five or six patients will walk in daily when the clinic is not actively seeing patients, and she receives phone calls throughout the day, every day.
They're sick. They need refills. I don't have any money for something. How can I get it? They just need somebody to talk to. You know, if they're new, they're usually pretty upset.
Michael Burks is HIV positive and was sitting in this very clinic, which also sees patients from Benton County, when he was newly diagnosed and he experienced those fears. Michael is now the president of HIV Arkansas and recalls when he first heard of the support organization.
And I was in the clinic one day and I overheard two people talking about this group. And I thought, okay, maybe that's something that I need to check into. Because I felt all alone. I felt isolated. I didn't know who to talk to, didn't know where to go, didn't know what to do next.
The volunteer-run organization was founded in 2004, and one of their main goals is to provide a social network for HIV patients through groups and gatherings.
Folks that, particularly people that are newly diagnosed, they want to stay in, they don't want to be social because they just feel shamed. So one of our goals is to provide an outlet for them to really stay in the social network and be out among people that are like them, and help them feel more comfortable with their diagnosis.
Another goal of HIV Arkansas is education, with testing being the number one component. Michael says that all sexually active people should be tested. Just like Matthew McConaughey's character in Dallas Buyers Club learns, anyone can contract the disease, not just those in a high-risk category, i.e., an IV drug user or a homosexual male. Testing at many locations in the area is free, including next door to the Washington County HIV Clinic inside the County Health Department. And if you were to receive a positive result,
get connected with the right resources, and that would be a doctor that is specializing in HIV. As far as I'm understanding, there are three in this area, one in the Bentonville area, Rogers area, and then two in Fayetteville.
Unlike treatment 30 years ago, which often meant taking up to 40 pills a day, Michael says it's pretty simple these days.
They will prescribe medication for you. It's not like in the Dallas Buyers Club, it was tons of medication that they had to purchase. And they had to take several pills a day, probably several times a day. And they've developed drugs that are, you may take three pills a day, you know, once a day. So it's a lot better than it used to be. The side effects are nothing at all like they used to be.
Proper treatment today means living a long and full life. Far gone are the days of skinny patients bearing skin lesions and pale skin. Treatment is also important, as those patients whose viral loads are suppressed do not transmit the virus as readily as those that are untreated. The HIV Arkansas website states that Arkansas has one of the highest rates of those living with HIV who are not receiving regular treatment. It's around 70%, much higher than surrounding states and national rates. Fear being the biggest barrier to testing and treatment. But there are also financial concerns for many. Treatment, Michael says, can cost between $3,000 and $3,500 each month. The hope is that the Affordable Care Act will alleviate some of these worries. Living in a rural area can also be a problem. As he mentioned, there are just three full-time HIV doctors in the Northwest Arkansas area, which has around 500,000 residents. Deborah, who declined to give her last name, lives in Baxter County. She is also HIV positive.
I have to drive about an hour and 45 minutes to see my doctor. So my personal mission is to try and bring knowledge to the local doctors in my area so that they will see the need and the number of positive patients in this area so that possibly in the future we could get someone locally to provide us with care.
She estimates there are just over 30 people living with HIV in her county. Deborah is a member of the governor's HIV task force and, as such, participates in monthly conference calls with people holding similar aspirations. She has been a member for just over a year and is beginning to see some progress.
The changes have been small, but they are positive changes. In my particular area, we're now having monthly support meetings, which are extremely helpful to the HIV community, because being HIV positive, you do not have the freedom to discuss your status with everyone. So that provides a forum where we can sit and talk with one another, whether it be about our medications or whatever.
Deborah, obviously female and not in the high-risk categories for HIV we mentioned earlier, was married and only partaking in sexual activities with her husband. Just under 5 years ago, she learned that her unfaithful, now ex-husband, had tested positive. She was tested immediately and says that early detection was a blessing. Like Deborah, Danny Harris did not see himself at risk. He was the victim of a violent crime that led him to become HIV positive. He also says that status has turned out to be a godsend, though he lost much.
Because what it's allowed me to do is to figure out and find purpose and significance in my life. And it's also offered me the opportunity to share that purpose and significance with other people. And by that I mean that especially in the early stages of diagnosis, there's a lot of darkness involved in a person's life. There's a lot of confusion, a lot of turmoil. And that can continue in a person's life, it can continue endlessly unless there's a moment when the light switch is turned on. And I try to be that light switch. I try to be that moment of light and brightness in a person's life to help remove that darkness, or at least to find their path through that darkness.
Danny is now the statewide outreach coordinator for R-CARE's Division of Special Services. The organization is based in Augusta, Arkansas, and at heart is a community wellness organization with 31 health clinics across the state. Now, they have 14 offices around the state that do HIV case management. Like many who have been freshly diagnosed, Danny didn't know where to turn. But it was actually finding the support group within HIV Arkansas that led him to his job. Since his start almost 10 years ago, our care services have expanded greatly, and Danny now spends much of his time driving around the state, visiting with patients and the 14 case managers who disperse medications, test members of the community, and offer support services. As the others have mentioned, Danny reiterates that getting tested is the most important thing that someone can do for themselves and for others. He says there are 250 to 300 known newly diagnosed cases each year in the state of Arkansas. He cites a CDC method for determining those that don't know they're positive, saying that 22% of all HIV cases don't know they have it. That puts Arkansas's numbers between 1,500 and 2,000 people in the state.
They just don't get tested. And for a lot of reasons. Some people just don't want to know. And I'm surprised at the number of people I encounter that say, I don't want to know. I because there's responsibilities to that. And if I've got it, I'm just going to get sick and die. And it's not that at all anymore.
Danny himself began to see symptoms that led him to get tested.
You know, we had the act of violence that occurred. And just like clockwork, 6 months later, I started getting ill. I started getting sick. I started showing flu-like symptoms that I couldn't get rid of. I had some skin splotches, and I lost some weight real quickly. And I've never been real good at losing a lot of weight real quickly, but at that point, I did. It was time for my annual physical, so I asked the doctor while we were doing the physical if he could also do the HIV test. So he did the test, and sure enough, it was there.
But his numbers were good, and his immune system was holding its own. And today, Danny looks like any other person. He lost much, including his wife, with the diagnosis. But he continues to see it as a blessing, as he has found his calling in helping others, helping them to feel normal living with HIV. Here's Michael Burks.
People that are HIV positive are just like normal people. There may be your neighbor may be positive, someone across the street, someone that you work with. They look normal. They act normal.
And when Debbie Zimmerman, the nurse at the Washington County HIV Clinic, receives criticism from peers and friends for what she does.
I've had nurses, not so much lately, but in the past, you know, and different people say, how can you work with them? It's like, well, how do you know you're not?
For more information on the organizations involved in this story or how to receive an HIV test, visit our website, ozarksatlarge.com. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
Usually, when we search for the meaning behind a name of some place or something for our What's in a Name series, we find out history or legend plays a heavy influence. Buildings may be named for an iconic member of the community, towns for a geographical feature or founder. Sometimes, though, a name has to be created out of, more or less, pure imagination.
I must admit, we spent much less time coming up with the title than we did talking about the content of the magazine.
Lynn Wasson is managing editor and co-publisher of the magazine Entertainment Fort Smith, often called E. Fort Smith. Naming a magazine is, in some ways, the same as selecting a name for a new park or a campus building. Those responsible seek an appropriate title reflecting the essence of what's inside. But a magazine is a commercial endeavor, and that title may or may not help a new enterprise succeed.
We came up with Entertainment Fort Smith because we thought entertainment encompassed what we were trying to say about our content. But my goodness, for logo purposes, it certainly is a long word.
So Lynn Wasson and co-publisher Linda Siebold quickly decided 15 years ago that they could condense Entertainment Fort Smith to E. Fort Smith. And if you remember, the letter E was pretty hot in the late 90s and early 2000s.
15 years ago, which seems archaic now in the digital age, there were two things competing to symbolize that something was connected to the internet. One was the letter E, as in email or e-books. And for some aesthetic reason, we just thought E was more interesting. At the time we were choosing our name, we looked through the dictionary for words that begin with E and thought, could we make a play off of that letter, you know, being E for, at the time, electronic.
And that name has worked, 15 years and counting. While nationally magazines have been disappearing, regionally they've been appearing. There are stalwarts like AY Magazine, Cityscapes, and Celebrate, but also more recent additions like To Enjoy, Current Land, and Idle Class. 3W Magazine has been publishing its annual journal cataloging charitable social events for several years. Leslie Zanoff is a co-founder of 3W Magazine. She says the name is inspired by the old journalism axiom of the five W's: who, what, where, when, and why. Though not everybody reaches that conclusion immediately.
We get a lot of people asking if 3W stands for three women, and it doesn't. It's just Casey and myself that started the magazine. So yes, 3W stands for the who, what, where.
Leslie says it took at least a couple of months of list making and brainstorming to come to an agreement on what the venture should be called. 3W is also inspired by a national approach to a charitable events registry. She says now the concept of the who, what, and where of philanthropy in Northwest Arkansas, 3W, serves as a template for what should or should not be included in the pages of the magazine.
All of our editorial, it has to do with giving back and volunteering and philanthropist in Northwest Arkansas. If it doesn't kind of fit into those, that category, then it's not in the magazine. It's not in print. But other than that, for the calendar of dates of all the community events that are happening. So for the editorial, though, yes. If it's not about giving back or volunteering, it's not in the magazine.
The most familiar magazines have names that have remained the same for years. Sports Illustrated, Cosmopolitan, Better Homes and Gardens have been published with those names for decades. Though Cosmopolitan's first issues in the 1880s were under the name The Cosmopolitan. Sometimes, however, the first name doesn't quite fit. Catherine Frederick is the editor-in-chief of Due South Magazine in Fort Smith.
Well, you know, some of our readers remember when we first started back in 2010, we were actually known as Ad Urban. And that's how we started. We really thought we were going to be a magazine of and about the city, and we are. But we quickly figured out by the stories that we told, we were anything but urban. You know, we went back and looked at all the stories that we had been writing, and the common thread through all of them was our southern roots.
Some of the covers of the magazine when it was called At Urban: a barn on the cover of the September 2013 issue, and a rooster the month before that. So Catherine and Marla Cantrell, the managing editor of what is now called Due South, schemed to come up with something that was more inclusive, covering what happens inside the city limits, but also throughout the region. Marla says the current name came from a desire to reflect the content and to serve as an internal mission statement.
We're both Southern girls, and we felt like that we weren't really urban after we had done this for a little while. And yes, it's a mission statement. We love everything about the South. We think we're good storytellers. We want to tell those stories. We want to connect to Arkansas. That's why we use the Arkansas logo a lot. So yes, it's absolutely a mission statement for us.
The new name, Due South, works for Marla and Catherine in many ways. The Due is D-O, so headlines can be a sort of call to action. And the pun of Due South, D-U-E, allows for a reinforcement of the magazine's target subjects.
You know, when we first started looking at changing the name, it was a very big decision for us. We looked at, we knew South had to be in the name. It was who we were. We looked at different names. We looked at Southbound because we like that. We like the idea. But we didn't want people to confuse us with a travel magazine. So when we looked at Due and Due, D-U-E, could have gone either way. But really, we liked the kind of double entendre there that we could, you know, take the word Due and use it in so many different forms throughout the magazine every month. You know, do our DIY, do make our recipe. And then, like you said, Due South, D-U-E, you know, do travel.
Everybody asked about their magazine for this story stressed the name is important. But even the best name can't carry you for more than a few issues without two things: great content and a great roster of contributors. After all, once the name's in place, you have to fill the pages with words and pictures that bring people back. Lynn Wasson with Entertainment Fort Smith says in an age when mobile screens can bring us images and content of almost everything, a physical magazine not only represents information, but a chance to unwind.
The experience of holding a magazine with one or both hands encourages someone to sit down in a quiet place and put their feet up and devote minutes of their attention and enjoyment to reading. And who would have thought? That sounds like stating the obvious. But when you are reading on a digital screen, you could have an infinite number of other things distracting you. I know I do.
And as far as names, each publisher or editor included in this edition of our What's in a Name series had favorite magazine titles of their own, names they think are spot on for the publications they represent.
Garden and Gun.
Real simple, and I'm feeling like I need to simplify my life that month, and that looks good to me too and sounds good.
The two best magazine names in the world, Time and Life.
If you have a question about why something in our area bears the name it does and want to know the story behind that name, let us know. You can email your suggestions for a future What's in a Name story to us at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
I'm Bob Garfield. On this week's On the Media, the unfolding story of a prisoner exchange that became a partisan issue.
In the days since his dramatic release from the Taliban, the Pentagon, fellow soldiers, and Afghans have presented two vastly contradictory portraits of Bo Bergdahl. Deserter or good soldier?
Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Stay tuned to KUAF. On the Media begins later this morning at 11.
Every month on Ozarks at Large, we feature a music review of something new or something old, basically something that has caught our ear. And this month, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda chose a group she saw at last weekend's Wakarusa Music Festival.
I can't bear it no more.
Music is so easily accessible and abundant these days that it can be a little overwhelming when you want to seek out new music. One way to grab my attention is with a unique band name, hence my interest in seeing St. Paul and the Broken Bones perform at Wakarusa last week. The Birmingham, Alabama band is currently touring in support of its new album, Half the City. The 12-song project was released in February on Single Lock Records. The album was produced by Ben Tanner of Alabama Shakes, which should come as no surprise as the record has a soulful sound similar to that of the Shakes. Officially, the band is credited as a sextet, but they performed as a 7-piece band last week. Regardless of the band's size, the group's live show is something to behold, thanks in large part to lead singer Paul Janeway's exuberant performance. Wearing black-rimmed glasses, a dark suit with a cream pocket square, and a red button decorated with the word Alabama pinned to his coat, the blonde-haired frontman is anything but imposing. His quick, sheepish smile and calm walk to his microphone on stage present such a subdued entrance that it in no way prepares you for what's coming next. Once Paul starts singing, he never stops moving until the concert is over. He climbs on top of amps and shows off his James Brown-inspired footwork as he belts out lyrics about pain and sorrow that are rife in his songs, including one titled I'm Torn Up. While the wailing is a powerful way to convey the singer's strife, it's best in moderation. According to the band's website, the frontman's handle of St. Paul is a wry allusion to his grounding in the church. The lead singer grew up in a small Alabama town and was raised in a non-denominational, Pentecostal-leaning local church. Paul grew up listening to gospel music, and his goal in life until he was about 18 was to be a preacher. Though his band's music is secular, you can find references to the frontman's religious roots in his music. One example is the song titled It's Midnight.
My mama told me, son, it won't go away. That old heartache, it won't stop the rain. Please just try, boy. Just find the Lord. If you can hear him say, just sit and pray.
Paul played guitar and sang in church, and while he was exposed to key influences in gospel music, he began to diversify his listening by attending open mic nights in Birmingham's clubs. The frontman heard the music of Tom Waits and Nick Cave, and in an interview on the band's website, Paul says they have that passion. They've built this aura. They're showmen to the teeth. And that's what got me. It's like going to church in a weird way. For a time, Paul was a member of a band that played Led Zeppelin covers. His work in rock music introduced him to bassist Jesse Phillips, and they began writing together. One of the results of their collaboration is the song Broken Bones and Pocket Change.
Young love has made me all worn down like winter comes, here she goes, that I know is true, broken bones, hip pocket change.
During his band's first set at Wakarusa, Paul joked about this being one of the band's happier songs. The album does often focus on sad affairs of the heart, like in the track Grass is Greener, where the lead singer begs his love not to leave him.
I know that I've been cold. Baby, I ain't got no soul. I've had those sweet sugar thoughts. They had taken away from me. They can't melt me no more. I just have to be so unhappy. We put on our Sunday best. We live our quiet mess. But we'll never be.
St. Paul and the Broken Bones debut album, Half the City, is a soulful record that, between the horn section and the lead singer's bellows, packs a powerful punch. Sure, the songs focus on heartache, but isn't the tough stuff the best kind to sing about? Paul Janeway's voice is just so impassioned that you can't turn the song off, even if you know it's going to break your heart. Half the City is available now, and the band is currently on tour. More information is available at stpaulandthebrokenbones.com.
Hold his poor and lonely heart. It is made of pure steel. And you can't let it cry.
Our music review provided by Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda.
Rodeo grounds typically sound like this. But what about this? Parsons Stadium in Springdale, home to rodeo in the Ozarks, was the host of the Monster Truck Racing Super Series the final weekend of May. While the group was in Springdale, I visited as organizers were setting up the racetrack and as monster truck drivers were preparing for the weekend of competition and show.
I didn't really want to do monster trucks in the beginning. I wanted to build off-road vehicles, but since the autonomy kind of went down, nobody wants to spend very much money on play toys, so I got forced into doing this, and we love every minute of it.
That's 30-year-old monster truck driver Devin Jones. He's been driving one for 8 years. He and his father started off racing pro arena trucks, smaller versions of monster trucks. Devin first purchased a used monster truck, but it quickly no longer met his needs. So he and his father built his current truck, Barbarian.
Here we are. I mean, we've been to the World Finals in Las Vegas, did great out there, got eighth out of, I think, 32 trucks in the main field and did our first ever backflip. So, I mean, we're stepping our game up, winning a lot of championships and keep rolling with it.
The body of the truck is a 2010 Ford Super Duty pickup with many additions and modifications. So what exactly makes a truck a monster truck?
Well, right off the bat, it's just the big tires. I mean, they're over 6 foot tall and weigh about 700 pounds a piece. They're just massive. If you stand up next to it, it's about as tall as about anybody out there. And it's so massive a truck. It weighs about 10,000 pounds, so it can crush anything that's in the way. And then about 1,500 horse. So your normal car has 300 horse, or five times that.
The Barbarian is just that, uncivilized and feisty. Painted blue and red, complete with a picture of a barbarian and flames. A competition usually begins with a wheelie contest. Devin says the object is to get the truck straight vertical. Then do something like a slack willy to impress the crowd. Side-by-side racing is next, followed by a freestyle portion. He says Barbarian really likes to do a trick called the slack willy.
I can usually do them in pretty small areas where a lot of guys have to have a big wide open area. So that's mainly my trick, but I like going huge air and it just, whatever the... I feed off the crowd, and if they're sitting there getting loud for me, we're going to keep going. The slap wheelie, you just have to kind of use the either a dirt heel, and it's just timing. It's pretty much like hitting a bump on a bicycle. If you hit the front tire and it just pops it up, and you just keep riding it out, and then you finally let it down after you touch the back bar.
As one can imagine, the monster trucks take a lot of abuse. This one is just 2 years old. It might run in a competition 10 minutes a week, but the maintenance time can be up to 40 hours a week. As an owner, operator, and driver, he says the upkeep is like another job. Devin is also responsible for hauling Barbarian across the country to the 45 shows they participate in each year. To do so, he has a large tractor-trailer truck painted a bright purple. This is also where he calls home. It has a living space, room to carry his truck and its large tires, a personal car for getting around in towns, and a working mobile shop, complete with welding equipment. Anything and everything needed to fix Barbarian. The cab of Barbarian is stripped down to bare bones.
It's made actually for me. The seat's made for me. It's a NASCAR style seat. That way it's all protected. It's just a lot of tubing. Because, I mean, if you roll over one of these trucks, it is 10,000 pounds, and sometimes we'll be 20 foot up in air when we land. So it's all safety for us. It's safety for the crowd.
The only radio is a kill radio that track officials can use to shut the truck off in case of emergency. There are strict safety rules imposed by the Monster Truck Racing Association. When driving, Devin dons a multi-piece fire suit and helmet that meet NASCAR ratings. Concentration and a steady hand must be helpful in driving, but Devin says a good monster truck driver also has a level head.
Some guys go out there and if they lose, they just get so hot and they just kind of get frustrated, then everything can go downhill from there. So nobody can really rile me up. I love winning, but I also love the crowd being entertained. So even if I win, if I lose, we're still sitting out there doing the best we can for the crowd.
In his 8 years, there have only been a few moments that he's been really scared. He says he once came close to hitting a building. But he says being frightened just comes with the territory when you are seeking air in a large truck at 45 shows a year. Last year, he recalls doing 6 venues in 9 days. This is the busy season with summer and fall events and fairs. He's also been out of the country, to Moscow and other parts of Europe and to Puerto Rico. Though the sport is typically American, he says he has seen arenas jam-packed with up to 30,000 people in Moscow. Barbarian traveled to Russia in a container on an ocean liner, taking about 3 weeks to get there and three to get back. In this area, Devin is a bit of a hometown favorite as he grew up in Miami, Oklahoma. He drove a show there just last weekend and is expected again to be the favorite this weekend in Fort Smith. Because the alleyway leading into Minion Arena is intended for horses and bulls, the trucks must drive in on their small tires, the large ones being brought in by forklift. Once the tires are changed, the trucks call Parsons Arena or K. Rogers Park home for the weekend. Brad Darnell is with Monster Events Incorporated, a company that organizes events like this. He coordinates the drivers of the 6 Monster trucks, 12 Pro Arena trucks, and Freestyle Motocross. Brad has been in the business for over 30 years. The sport began in the 1970s with trucks like Bigfoot, though he says a monster truck show has changed much over the years.
Back in the day, just for a truck to climb onto cars, it was a real slow deal and really kind of boring. Now, if you see one of those old videos from where monster trucks started, and now it's progressed to these are fast. Now these trucks are so state-of-the-art and so advanced technologically that they can hit the cars at 25, 30 miles an hour and jump, you know, hundreds of feet.
Brad arrives to every show a few days early to set up the courses and prep cars. Typical to many monster truck competitions, there are cars, piles of old cars for the trucks to mount, run over, or jump. The vehicles are acquired locally through USA Metal Recycling. Destined for the crusher, the monster trucks just help them out a bit.
What we look for are big, nice cars, like the Cadillacs are good cars. They come in with glass in them, and the rodeo grounds, that's special sandy dirt, so we have to prep the cars, take all the glass out, take the headlights out, and so on, so that we don't leave any glass in the arena from the trucks running over them. So we got them out here and we're prepping them, taking all the glass out and getting them ready to go in the arena.
Cars are an integral part of the course. There are 2 stacks of 5 cars each, plus the car van car stack.
The trucks will run side by side racing over that. They'll also do a chase course, which one starts on one stack and the other on the other directly opposite. They'll run opposite directions like a chase. We call that Chicago style racing. And then there'll be a car and then a van and a car. We call it the car van car stack, and that's basically just for freestyle.
The freestyle portion takes place at the end of the show and is the most popular with the viewers. The drivers get 90 to 120 seconds to do whatever they want to do, like going backwards over the cars, popping wheelies, or flipping their trucks. There are judges in the stands that will judge their freestyle performance. The judges for the Springdale competition were members of the community who entered a contest and won the opportunity to take part in this way. Before the Friday evening show, they partook in a training session to learn what to look for. Before the show, attendees have the chance to ride in a monster truck. The Mighty Monster Bus gives a squirrely ride for $10. On Friday evenings, there's a free pit party. Shows begin at 7:30, but from 6 to 7, people are let out onto the arena floor and given the opportunity to walk up to the trucks, visit with the drivers, and take pictures. For more information, search Monster Truck Racing Super Series on Facebook. To see pictures or watch videos of Barbarian and Devin Jones, visit barbarian4x4.com. This is Ozarks at Large. Members of the band Excluded have yet to enter high school, let alone graduate. But they have already released an album, Shadows. The 5-member group stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio on their first official day of summer and played a few songs, including this one.
This next song is called Forgiveness, also an original by us. It's just about how great forgiveness can be and how it can mend relationships and how it always beats out hatred, and it's just how great it can be, basically.
That was Excluded, made up of Jake Phillips, Trey Waggle, Coleman Warren, Quincy Graves, and Sam Shaw. Together, they are Excluded. For more information, visit facebook.com/excluded. That's with an X.
It is Sunday, June 15th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Karnatz.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor, Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Is it safe to come out now?
Friday the 13th, long gone, in the rearview mirror.
Okay.
Sunny Sunday morning.
Okay, I'm going to come out. And I'm going to talk about one of my favorite people, Mark Landon Smith.
Yes.
When he came to Arts Life Theater in 2003, the company produced two shows a year and had about a dozen after-school classes.
And now?
And now, the company turns 30 years old this season, has 54 classes and camps, produces 8 shows a year, and touches the lives of at least 300 children and families as opposed to about 30 back then. Mm-hmm. Mark's a go-getter.
Yes, I think that's fair to say.
And he has a formula for his season that tries to prepare kids for going on to theater as a career. He's got kids at the Royal Academy in London, and he's got kids in New York. And
someday he's going to have a former student accepting, you know,
a Tony or
a SAG or a Oscar or something.
And one of the coolest things is that they've done all of these new scripts, and they've done adaptations of scripts that all say in the script when it's published, first presented at Arts Live right. Theater, and here's the original cast. So here's the shows coming up this fall, so you can plan to be there for the next amazing thing. August 7th through 10th is Just a High School Play.
Okay.
Interesting idea that there are about 18 representative characters of every high school everywhere. You know, the jock, the hunk, the actress. Mm. And this is a play that deals with how those kids approach high school. In September, Stuart Little.
Mm-hmm. The Mouse, right?
The Mouse.
Yeah.
In October, Make It to Tomorrow, a comedy with robots.
All right.
I'm in.
An original script by Arts Live actor and playwright Reed Carson,
okay,
who I think is still in high school. He may have graduated this year, but I think he's a senior in high school this fall.
He's written one of their other ones,
uh-huh,
too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. November, Peter Pan, the Disney musical. Mm-hmm. February, A Little Princess, which is going to be a new adaptation. In April, Rock Dogs, the musical, a new work developed by the Arkansas Playwrights Workshop with Theater Squared.
Cool.
And in May, Shrek the Musical, and then next June, The Giver, which is a really cool story.
Yeah.
Arts Live does not do season tickets, so you have to get your tickets before each show, but you can find out more at 521-4962. And this afternoon, the last chance to see Beside Myself, Jamie McGaw's new play.
Call, because Thursday night, which was the
first jam-packed.
Standing room only, and maybe not even that.
Yeah, yeah. And it stars Jim Goza, who is amazing, wonderful, and I love him. So it's two great June birthday boys. Friends of Hobbs State Park speaker series is Robert Thomas on Dragonflies at 2 o'clock.
Are you going to be there? Because aren't you a fan of Dragonflies?
I am a fan of Dragonflies, but I'm also a fan of the music afternoon at 2 o'clock at the Fayetteville
yes,
Public
are.
Library. That's where I'll be. There's also an afternoon tea. Vice and Virtue, Two Prosecutors' Thoughts with Daniel Hsu at 2 o'clock at the Clayton House in Fort Smith. A Belgrove Historic District walking tour at 2:30 at the Clayton House. And tonight, the 24-hour playoff.
Wow.
At the new play festival at Nadine Baum Studios. 6 o'clock, that's when people who have had 25 hours to put together a show you what they came up with.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
On the next backstory, you've probably heard the idea that corporations are people. That goes back to a Supreme Court decision in the 19th century. The thing is, it doesn't come from the actual decision, but from a court reporter.
It may be the only case in Supreme Court history of not judge-made law, but reporter-made law.
The history of the American corporation on the next backstory.
That's Monday at 1 p.m. on KUAF3.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. Earlier, your story about monster trucks.
Yes. They're big trucks.
They are big trucks. That inspired this, in a way, inspired this week's Sunday montage.
Trucks?
No, monsters.
All right.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise, he did the monster mash.
And what is this? Ah, this is wood for the fire.
Wood.
And this is fire. No, no. Fire is good.
Fire, no good.
The wolf bit you, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
Go, 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 Godzilla! Go, 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 Godzilla!
Ah!
I could remember everything inside of me, just wanted to fit in.
This is very old wine. I hope you will like it.
Aren't you drinking?
I never drink. Why?
If you want to see a list of the 10 clips that were used in this week's montage, you can go to ozarksatlarge.com. I do have a theory about this.
What's that?
Well, half of those were sounds from classic horror movies. And most of the music was classic rock, stuff recorded in the 70s. And I think that people who were old enough to be in the classic rock bands were ones like me who were most likely to have stayed up late on Friday or Saturday nights watching those old movies from the 30s and 40s.
So you would have had to have been born in like the 60s in order to have gotten any of those?
No.
No? Okay.
It helps. Okay. It helps. But okay. No.
On the next Fresh Air Weekend, John Waters. His new book, Carsick, is about hitchhiking cross country. Also, Mike Myers of Wayne's World and the Austin Powers films tells us why he made the new documentary about music manager Shep Gordon, who also joins us. Gordon's clients have included Alice Cooper and Teddy Pendergrass. Join us.
Fresh Air Weekend, Sunday at 6 p.m. on 91.3 FM.
And this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Oak Grove.
Oak Grove.
Northwest of Springdale.
Yes, it is. Today is the beginning of the 2014 polo season in
Woo-hoo.
Northwest Arkansas. Yeah. In a couple of weeks, I'll have a full story about polo because it does have a presence in Northwest Arkansas. But I did want to mention that the first match of the season will be today. The Northwest Arkansas Polo Club will be taking on the Tulsa Polo Club. I talked to John Wilson, who's the president of the Northwest Arkansas Polo Club, earlier this week. It's free. It's taking place from noon to 4. It's near Bentonville. It's west of 9635 Price Coffee Road. Not that hard to find.
Okay.
So.
And you're going to go.
I am.
Okay.
I am. I'm not. Yes. I'm not playing or anything like that.
No.
But I will tell you that Price Coffee Road is one of the prettiest stretches of road in Northwest Arkansas. It's gorgeous. So noon to 4, it's free. Jeans and boots. Fine, because you're going to be on this beautiful polo field watching them play.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah.
Weekend Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Karnatz.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
You're back tomorrow?
I'm back tomorrow, all by myself.
All right, all by yourself.
Yeah.
We'll end today's show with some music from Jim Lauderdale. He's going to be playing at George's Majestic Lounge on Friday evening.
Friday night.
At 9:30 p.m. in the garden, so in the back part that's relatively remodeled.
Yes, and he's something else. Grammy winner, worked with Ralph Stanley. He's worked with everybody. Will be worth your time. I can't imagine why it wouldn't be.
Well, this is his song, I Know Better Now. And thanks for listening. Have a good Sunday.
Playing by your set of rules, pretending that you'll never lose. But I know. Yeah.